When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the 36th episode of the Pirate Rugby Pod. And folks, we have made it and hit the elusive 1,000 subs mark on YouTube. So honestly, this is a massive thank you from both of us. And it's onwards and upwards, hopefully, from here. So if you haven't already, please like, share and subscribe.
You can also check us out on TikTok, where we upload short form content all the time. And you can also check out our Substack, which I'd like to show to you now. So I'm going to share my screen. So this is going to be interesting for YouTube viewers. If you primarily listen to us on audio, then please give the YouTube a check out because there's obviously a lot more visual. Can you see the screen, mate?
Can indeed.
Okay, so this is our Substack. So it's like halfway between a website and a blog. So you get all of our podcasts are here. So if you subscribe to this completely for free, just put your email in. You get all of our content emailed direct to your inbox, including the Sunday Read, which is a long form article where we look at a different topic each week. This week, we looked at the top five Jouer rugby teams that are not Harlequins. So Harlequins are kings of the Jouer at the moment after beating UBB in Europe. But we looked statistically at who the other top Jouer teams are. I'm not going to linger on it for too long, so you can read it just here. You need to go and subscribe to it. Link is in the description box below. Also, just while I'm here, you can also get the Friday Breakfast Show, which for new people who don't know is an audio only 15-minute mini podcast that comes out every Friday morning, hence the name. And with that comes this email Substack newsletter with it, which gives you the audio links for the podcast. It gives you the big three games that we pick out from the weekend that you can't miss. So last week it was Ulster versus Cardiff, Italy versus Scotland, and Toulon versus Toulouse, which I think we got broadly right. Maybe we'll talk about some of the ones that we missed later on in the show. And it also gives you Ender's rugby TV guide in written form. But if you follow Ender on Twitter anyway, you can already see that. Anyway, that's enough of that. That's enough of the promotion. Let's talk about our rugby moments of the week. And my rugby moment is the last try that was scored all weekend. It was scored by Demi Penno for Otto Burglar, Ube Bay, against Clermont in the top 14, where if you haven't seen it, Rugby EK Analysis posted the clips on Twitter. Essentially what happens is Clermont cross UBB's try line and Louis Biobere, who was on the pitch alongside, by the way, Madash Temwe and Damien Penno, ever heard of him? Three amazing wingers all on the pitch at the same time because France. So Clermont cross Dordo's try line. Louis Biobere holds the guy up, drags him back. Clermont tried to spit it wide, but the ball goes to the ground. Damien Penno hacks it forward, regathers, is running like 100 metres to the opposition to Clermont's try line. He's got a Clermont player closing him down, right? This Clermont player is him. He's going to catch him. But for some reason, the Clermont player decides, I'm going to try a Hollywood-style diving ankle tap and try and get him that way. Completely misses him. No one is more gutted about this than Damien Penno himself, who now has another 50 metres to run, despite having been on the pitch for 80 minutes already, having already scored two tries in the same game and being absolutely knackered. It is the most reluctant scoring of a try you'll ever see in your life. Anyway, that was my moment of the week. What was yours, mate?
Mine was also shared by EK Rugby Analysis. If you don't follow him on Twitter, make sure you do. He shares great content. But he shared a clip from the URC's Twitter page, which was the cracking try from the Stormers v Ospreys game, where Jack Walsh intercepted a crossfield attempt by Livock and made a great break and then passed it on to Luke Morgan, who scored a really good try. But the best part of this clip, which is pointed out by EK, was that who was the last player making it back to make the tackle behind the try line? Look, it didn't prevent the score, but at least he was there. And it was 39-year-old Brock Harris. What a legend. The Stormers are going through a bit of an injury crisis in that position at the moment, but he's still showing up week on week, putting in performances like that. He's not just on the field, to win scrums. He's also there to put in performances and make moves like that. So I just thought that was a wonderful moment from an absolute legend of the game. He's 39 and he certainly looks it, but he's still putting in incredible.
He's got previous with the Ospreys as well, having been a Dragons player for so long. So he hates the Ospreys like any sane human being. Anyway, so I'm going to list some of our listeners' moments of the week this week. So Maz, our friend Maz, comes in with two. One is the one that I gave. And the other one is sitting after a game on the rugby field with a certain Lavani Bhatia. Maz loves a name drop, especially if it's a Fijian. So she was sat with Lavani Bhatia, and Lavani Bhatia turns to her and goes, "Hey, you must be Maz." So, you know, who's the real famous person here? Meanwhile, Rugby Julia, our friend Julia, comes in with, most certainly it was Scotland's historic win in Italy after 25 years of being cursed. Also, Rolly's sick try in the end to absolutely seal the deal. That was a great one. Scarlet's Fever podcast chimes in with the 40 minutes of a rugby match that the Scarlets were winning this week. Didn't last more than 40 minutes, but it was nice while it did. Ospreys Irie podcast comes in with Ospreys calling a scrum under the Stormers post, which led to the try. Just the chutzpah of it, the confidence of it. We absolutely love it. Another moment of the week from me, because it's my show, so I get to have two, is a shout out from Brett McKay, aka BMC Sport on Twitter, shouting me out on the 8-9 Combo podcast, a friend podcast of ours. So that would delighted me. And then rugbyjp.com, which is a great account. If anybody needs to follow it, it's at rugbyjp.com on Twitter. Gives you all the results from all the Japanese League One, which we like to do here as well. And his or her moment of the week was Robbie Deans's Robbie Deans's Wild Knights winning their 14th consecutive game by putting 40 points on Toyota Verblitz, whose players include none other than Aaron Smuth, Bowden Barrett, and Peter Steph Dutoy. So that's our listeners' moments of the week. We absolutely love hearing these, everybody. Sorry, I missed one. Bill says John Hodnett's try against the Bulls, which we will talk about more in a moment. So what is our first actual rugby that actually happened that we're going to talk about this week, mate?
So that was the first of the women's Six Nations games that happened on the weekend. That was, unfortunately, from an Irish perspective, a very, very tough loss. I believe England scored, 88 points in the end. I know you caught most of this game. What were your thoughts on it? Where do Ireland go from here? Is it just business as usual for England? Is it inevitable given the massive gap between both sides and of course the structures beneath them, where England are essentially a professional side and Ireland simply aren't? What did you take away from this game?
I think it's tough. You know, England pound for pound, England Red Roses, probably the best rugby team in the world, and they were absolutely perfect in this game. Like, there's nothing that. They gave away a penalty try, I guess you could say that, against them. Ireland had a couple of okay moments, but just as the game wore on, they just couldn't live with England's intensity for 80 minutes. I think if you're Ireland, you just park it and forget about it, to be honest. It's not brilliant for the product to have England this far ahead of everybody else. It's quite scary, but you have to kind of credit the English. But yeah, I think at Ireland, you just forget and move on. There's not much to analyse about it, really. It looked like a great event at Twickenham. They're always getting huge crowds there for women's rugby matches now. And there was lots of activities and things going on. You know, there was lots of songs coming over the tannoy and everyone was loving it. Like Mr. Brightside by the Killers was just being played whilst play was going on and people were singing along to it. So at least the people who were there had a great day out, regardless of the lack of competitiveness of the game. So we look ahead to Le Crunch in the final match to see if France can give England a bit more of a game. But you know, Ireland have already shown how far they've come in the Six Nations. England are inevitable. You'd like to think that 88 points isn't inevitable, but you know, you've got someone like Ellie Kildan, who's just written a name all over World Player of the Year already. So just moving
and
on.
Looking to next week as well. England are taking on France, isn't that right? I believe the French have sold over 20,000 tickets already for that one.
Yeah. Great to see. Hopefully Le Crunch is, I hope they call it the Le Crunch in the Le Crunch. I hope they call it Le Crunch in the women's game as well. If they don't, someone will educate me otherwise, I'm sure.
And how did Scotland get on, mate?
Scotland got their mojo back. So we were a little bit worried about Scotland's women's for a couple of weeks when they didn't score a point against England, and they scored only one try against France. And we were saying, oh, maybe the progress wasn't right. But our friend Leslie re-educated me and said, look, these are the top two sides and it hasn't been that bad. Let's see what it's like when we play more people our level. And look, a first win away in Italy in 25 years doesn't tell a lie. Three tries scored by Scotland. They got the cutting edge back. EV Gallagher, their number eight, is absolutely fantastic. Like, if you're looking for non-English players to be in the women's lines in a couple of years, EV Gallagher is definitely right up there for me. Captain Dr. Rachel Malcolm, as always, showing up. Emma Raw has been fantastic for them in the backs as well. Chloe Rolley as well, really showing up particularly well, as Julia mentioned earlier. So Italy are not a bad team as well, considering the barriers that they have in terms of being competitive when you compare them to the likes of England and the likes of France. Particularly very good offloading game. If you look at the offloading stats, they offload more than the kind of teams around them, which is quite interesting. Scotland didn't offload barely at all in comparison. So just a good win, a good competitive game, and a game that we picked out before it happened as one where we didn't know which way the result was going. And there'll be another one of those, I think, next week when Scotland take on Ireland in Ireland. I couldn't call that one. So that's fantastic for the tournament. So even if maybe at the top it's a little bit foregone, certainly in the pack, in the chasing pack, it is very much anyone's game. And there's a place in WXV1 on the line for whoever finishes third in the Six Nations. So definitely one to tune in for me, probably one of my games of the week already.
And what about your favorite team, mate, Wales? What's going on?
It's not good. So a defeat to France, which you can forgive, it was a 40 points to nil defeat at home in Cardiff. Just absolutely nothing really to take from it. Wales's attack is just non-existent, unfortunately. No cutting edge. Yes, we had a lot of ball, and yes, we had a considerable amount of ball in France's half, but France just sat back and waited. And I noticed it's a theme from both this game and the game against England, is that both France and England let us have ball in their half, and then we would just turn it over. They would take the ball, run the length, and score. So it's, you know, people are trying to take positives from it. It's just, I think there's a mentality issue with Wales at the moment, where they're happy to be plucky losers no matter who they're playing against. Like, there's one thing being plucky losers against France and England, but if you're trying to portray yourself as plucky losers against Scotland and Ireland, who should be on our level, who we should be more than a match for, it's just not a great look. So unfortunately, the thing that we all thought was the shining light of Welsh rugby, which is the women's team, not so shiny at the moment. So probably less said about that, the better. So a bit of a whistle-stop tour of the Women's Six Nations this weekend, probably the biggest story. The only competitive game really was Scotland versus Italy, and Scotland getting the win was the big story there. Was there anything from Super W that we need to call out there, mate?
Yeah, so Waratahs and Fijian Drua are into the final, which is really exciting for Fijian Drua. And it was also great to see, you know, a sold out stadium as well. Like, Fijian Drua, I know the men's side are getting really good crowds, but it's great that they put on this doubleheader and to see such a big crowd at a women's rugby game in the Southern Hemisphere was really positive. Great to see. And yeah, I believe that the Taz are probably favourites, but I just think from a Fiji perspective, it's great to see the Drua in the final with them. So looking forward to that. It will be broadcast and it will be in our guide as usual this coming weekend. Shall we move on to the URC? I think we've a good bit to go over here. Some pretty crazy results, right?
Some crazy results in the URC this weekend. Absolutely. South Africa was the land of upsets, because there was three games in South Africa this weekend, and you can argue that each of them was an upset. Start with the massive one. The massive one was Munster becoming the first European team ever to go to Loftus and win.
Yeah.
Who could have seen this coming? When you saw the team sheets on paper before the game, you thought this could be a tasty one. But what was your take on it, mate?
Just really shocked and proud of that Munster performance. Like, this was a bonus point win away to the Bulls. And as I said, like, no European team wins there. Like, it's just not a thing. Now, I don't know whether the Bulls were caught off guard and whether that was on their mind. There's been a lot of ref chat. Let's not get into it, because that's not something we engage on really on this pod. I just think from a Munster perspective, they showed up and they put in a huge performance. Their bench was key. Conor Murray completely justified his new one-year contract. I thought he put in a performance of the ages. You know, he spoke recently about a lot of slack that he was getting online, how it's really kind of, you know, it got to him really. And I think that that performance really put a lot of that bullshit that he had to deal with to bed. So I thought that was a really strong performance by him. How good is Jack Crowley? He's been playing so well of late. I know he didn't have maybe the best day against Northampton, but I think he more than made up for it again. He seems to be such a confident player. Hate to say it, but Munster fans won't like Buddy. He reminds me of Sexton a lot. I think he's got that similar wants to win out. She's really competitive. You can tell that the players around him have a lot of respect for him and a lot of trust in him. But yeah, just a great result, I think, for the league as well. And it definitely, you know, was potentially a bit of a banana skin for the Bulls' hope of getting that home, you know, playoff spot. And like they definitely did not see this coming. They probably banked on this. There was so much chat around the Champions Cup and the Bulls, you know, resting their first team. Which personally, I absolutely understand why they did that. It doesn't really bother me that much. Again, from a URC perspective, I thought it was really cool and really, like, I'm sure the URC administrators were absolutely delighted with that decision as well. Would it backfired? But I don't think it was, you know, I don't think it was any fluke. Like, I think Munster went there with a plan, with a great squad, and deserved to win. And it's been pointed out a good bit this week as well that you know, it's probably a Munster squad or starting 15 that didn't get to see an awful lot of this season due to injuries and multiple other things, but mainly injuries. So I think, you know, when Munster are at pretty much full strength, they really are a formidable side. So fair play to them. But yeah, did not see that coming.
No, I absolutely didn't see it coming. You know, then 6-2 split, which I'm a big fan of. Conor Murray playing on one leg towards the end of it, but the Bulls will be absolutely fuming with themselves. And I wonder if it's just, you know, this isn't very statistical, but I just wonder if it's a bit of complacency. You know, when you never lose at home, do you just assume that one day, you know, the result will just come to you? Like, and Hudson obviously getting sent off didn't help. I think that probably changed the game, to be honest. I think that, you know, there's obviously loads of evidence of teams winning games when they are down to 14. So it wasn't in the bag. And all the stats after the game do say, you know, Munster were the better team. There isn't a stat that suggests that they got lucky or anything. But you wonder if that change hadn't been made. Also, taking Billy LaRue off after the red card, I thought was a mistake from Jake White. Jake White has had a shocker of a week. Like, he has got egg on his face. Let's just say no more than that. But,
he's achieved, he won't care one bit.
Yeah. We thought it was impossible to go to Loftus and win. So history again by Munster, winning away in Cape Town last year, winning away in Loftus this year. They've got it cracked, and we'll come on to it a bit later. They've got a shot of finishing top of the log now, which is really impressive.
Yeah. And then probably the other bombshell from the weekend was the Ospreys going to Cape Town and beating them, and thoroughly deserving of the win as well. What Toby Booth, I think, has done with this side has been honestly phenomenal. I don't know, what's your take on this result, mate? Like, again, did not see this coming. I know the Stormers haven't been at their best this season, I think it's safe to say, but you wouldn't bet against them in Cape Town. They came very close. They were a kick away from beating La Rochelle, and they'd already beaten La Rochelle in the regular season. Like, where did this performance come from? Or are you not too surprised because of Ospreys, you know, good form in the Challenge Cup and decent form in the URC, particularly of late?
I saw this coming, I'll be honest, and no one will believe me, but I've got
did you share it online?
Yeah.
If it's not on Twitter, then it didn't happen.
It's on Twitter. I called it. Styles make fights was my reasoning. Stormers take crazy amount of risks. Like, they're so frustrating to watch. They've got such a good team. They've got the players to play any game plan that they want. Any game plan they want. And they just chuck it around. They do stupid crossfield kicks. They do stupid 50-50 passes. They, instead of taking it tight, taking it a few phases, playing with percentages, they just throw a Hollywood ball. Why not? The 50-50, a 60-40. You know, let's just go for it. Ospreys are the opposite of that. The Ospreys take very few risks. They kick well. They play the percentages. They go to their set pieces. And if you watch the Ospreys this season, the majority of their tries either come from rolling mauls or capitalizing on opposition mistakes, i.e. crossfield kicks that go wrong, charge downs, knock-ons, pouncing on turnovers. That's how they score their tries. So I was kind of like, Stormers are kind of like the perfect opposition for the Ospreys, just in the amount of mistakes. And I'm going to say it, Stormers have been relying all season on their stars to bail them out. They've been relying on Manny Leboc, Damien Villeneuve, Warwick Hollands, a number of others, to dig them out of a hole when things go wrong. And now it was due to go wrong, and it's gone wrong. And now, by the way, next week, Leinster,
yeah.
And that would be, if they lose to Leinster, that's three home defeats in Cape Town in a row. That's not where the Stormers want to be. But from an Ospreys point of view, yeah, Toby Booth has got them all singing off the same hymn sheet. It's a very happy camp by all accounts. And they just know when they step on that pitch what they're going to be doing. They know what their strengths are, and they know how to play to them. It's something that you can't say very much about many Welsh rugby teams, that they go onto the pitch knowing what they're about to do for the next 80 minutes, unfortunately. But the Ospreys definitely do know that. Harry Deaves, like unknown players as well. You know, Ospreys have always had a great squad, and they've always had the bulk of the Welsh national team in them, although not this season because they're not getting picked. But players like Harry Deaves and Jack Walsh are really stepping up. And the people outside the Ospreys even maybe don't know Jack Walsh that well, but he's been absolutely fantastic for them. And Harry Deaves has come through the academy there, playing, you know, he's a flanker playing in a squad that's got Justin Siprick and Jack Morgan, two Welsh captains in it. And he's managing to be the standout flanker at the Ospreys this season. So that says a lot. Morgan Morris at number eight, probably Gats doesn't like his face for whatever reason, so he's probably never going to get a Wales cap, unfortunately, but absolutely turning up. The scrum, the line-out, like I said, it's all ticking. And it's a special day for the Ospreys, so I hope they celebrate it. Your other favourite team... Oh, sorry, did you want to come in on that?
No, I just for me, yeah, from the outside looking in, like with everything that's going on in Welsh rugby, to see a team performing like that. And again, we probably haven't maybe stressed this enough so far this season, that the URC has been incredibly competitive. Like when you look at the middle of the table, when you look at the top, you know, Leinster with another loss. I think it's been a really positive season. The viewing figures are good. The attendance figures look really good. Like it's just, it all seems so positive, especially when there's a lot of negativity, which we'll briefly touch on later with the controversial kickoff time for the FA Cup final clashing with the Champions Cup final. I just think things seem to be going really well for the URC, and results like this are just so important for that narrative as well. And it's yet another reason why it's just, this competition is just so much more interesting having these South African sides in. And maybe we should have seen all this coming with the Lions smashing Leinster. Where did that come from? Were you surprised by that? Because I'll be honest, I want to boast a little bit. Now, I got the score wrong. I put down in my Super Bowl prediction that the Lions would win by 1 point. It was a lot more than 1 point, but I just, there, like we had AP on. He was box office as he always is. And I think a great point that he made in that pod was what the Lions have is a bunch of players who potentially haven't really made it, who want to play for each other. They, you know, it's pretty much not, it's a very similar team that's put out, you know, week in, week out. And they're playing for each other, and they've got a chip on their shoulder, and you can really tell, especially from a defensive perspective as well. I thought they really showed up. But I absolutely love watching them, and yeah, did not see this coming in terms of the scoreline, but not overly surprised. And again, like how good is that for the URC, where the, you know, the least funded South African team is putting in performance like that. Now, I know it wasn't Leinster's first squad, but it definitely wasn't their third string team. Like there were some, like Kieran Foley was starting, you know, who started against La Rochelle in the Champions Cup. You know, that was, you know, I just I loved this result. I absolutely did. And you know what? Like seeing the Lions score as well. It's just, yeah, they're just one of my favorite South African teams. What did you make of this game, mate? Like
it was
your
a bit
thoughts
the,
and
I don't know
you
if you can smash
kinda,
and...
Am I talking up the Lions too much here or?
No, I don't think so. I think shout out Rian Lowe, who this would have been his moment of the week, I'm sure. He was at the game. A bit of a smash and grab, except you can't really do smash and grabs at home. But if you look at the stats, like Lions had like 33% territory. It was all Leinster, but Leinster just couldn't break through. Lions held them out, held them out, held them out. And it was six counter-attacking tries. I think it was six tries from 63 carries for the Lions. So a try every 10 carries. Like, it was just absolutely insane. Some really beautiful tries as well off kickoff. I mean, you can't knock the one that they scored directly off kickoff. That was a beautiful try. But maybe again, maybe this is the old famous Leinster's heads have been turned by wanting to get that famous fifth star on the jersey. So they're willing to sacrifice a few URC games. I've seen some Ospreys fans saying now, I think they play, Ospreys play away at Leinster either the week before or the week after the Champions Cup semi-final. So they're looking like, Maybe Leinster might field a weakened team for that game as well. And then this is exactly what happened against Munster in the URC semi-final last year. And they just start picking up the L's and suddenly that top spot isn't looking great. And if you don't finish top, you don't get a home final or even a neutral venue final. And if Leinster have to travel to goodness knows where for the final, then all bets are off. Then all bets are off for me. Yes, Leinster are amazing, but I think to go away anywhere in this league is no better than a 50-50 for, well, at the top anyway, you know, obviously the bottom clubs are a guaranteed W, but just fantastic for the league, like you say, and so happy for the Lions. You know, they've got the reputation of being the poor relation to the other South African teams. And yet you got the Sharks with all their Springboks languishing and the Lions have got a great chance of making the playoffs. So let's just talk about the run-in now. So I'm just going to share the screen again because I made this graphic on Twitter. Well, I made it on Excel, but I shared it on Twitter to show people kind of how exciting this run-in can be. So shout when you can see this screen, mate.
Yep, open up.
Okay, so this is the log as it is as of today. And then this is what everyone's run-in looks like. So we've got tour games. So a tour game is defined as a cross-hemisphere trip. And then the number of home games left. So you can see that Leinster have got one game left in South Africa, which is against the Stormers, which we mentioned already. And then they've got two home games left. And I think one of those is against Connacht and one of those is against Ulster. So you would expect them to win those. Although, again, maybe we'll see what team... Oh, no, because one of them is against the Ospreys. So I think... No, they have got an away game left against an Irish province. Anyway, so essentially, it's not guaranteed that Leinster are going to finish top because you've got Glasgow. They've got two tour games left, but they've also got two games against Zebre left. So if Glasgow can get 10 points off that Zebre game and Leinster don't get a bonus point win against whoever, then Glasgow could very easily finish top. And then Glasgow got one home game left as well, which is the Zebre game, which I just mentioned. So that's very open. And then you've got Munster coming from nowhere. So Munster have got a tour game left. Who's Munster playing this week? Can you just check for me quickly in the background, mate? So I believe it's another South African team. It will be either the Lions or the Sharks. And then they've got three home games left. Munster got three home games left. Me, Munster are an outside shout to finish top of the log. The Bulls will be kicking themselves. So the Bulls haven't got to go up north again. They've got three home games left, but slipping up at home to Munster like this, they really didn't need that. They really didn't need that. Benetton have got a tough run in. Two tour games left, one home game left. You fancy that maybe they've run their race now. They're not going to pick up too many more points potentially. Stormers have got to go up north again. Only two home games left. Ospreys. One game in South Africa, one home game left, but another game still to be played in Wales against Cardiff. And then Edinburgh, no tour games left, two home games left. And then Edinburgh, Connacht, Ulster, Lions, no tour games left. Lions, no trips up north, three home games, and they're on 39 points.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of the Lions, it is Munster they're playing this weekend, so good luck all on that one.
Yeah, wow, can't wait for that. Isn't this is exciting, isn't it? So looking at this, mate, what's kind of, do you have any idea who's going to be making the playoffs come the end of the season?
I think it's going to be tight, very tight. What's fascinating for me is seeing whether or not Glasgow can do it. Like, obviously, with the way the Shields are set up, they do have two easy enough games. No disrespect, but yeah, they're going to beat Zebre. They're going to get 10 points more than likely from those games. And I could see, like, Leinster, yeah, they've got a game against Connacht. I think they'd smash Ulster with Connacht. We don't know how Connacht will perform because they've been inconsistent. They could hockey Connacht or Connacht put in decent performance and they mightn't get that bonus point. So I think to see Glasgow finish top again would be great for the league and thoroughly deserved.
Definitely.
I know we've been singing the URC's praises, but until I think we see the Lenses of this world maybe put out their first team more often, I think that's when we'll be at a stage where it's that really maybe the top league in the world. I still probably think the top 14 is probably ahead, but then again, they're not putting out their first team, but they're still top of the log. So maybe if they get knocked out again this year for Feeling, you know, like if they get a similar result as they did last year with Feeling a weakened side against Munster, then they're going to have to change how they approach this competition. It's obviously not working. Which I just find it fascinating. Those are really interesting stats, especially with Munster having three home games. Munster have an incredibly good record at home. The Bulls as well with three home games. Like, yeah, I don't want to try to call it. Like, I've no idea who the top eight are going to be. I have a good idea of who top two are going to be. Especially particularly around that mid-table market, it's really hard to call it. I'd love to see the Lions make it, though. Not a Connacht expense, but would love to see them make it.
Yeah. I think Rugby AP might have called it a couple of weeks ago, is that Bulls will finish fourth, Stormers will finish fifth, Stormers go away to Bulls in the knockouts and somehow beat the Bulls. Like, I can see that now. It's starting to feel more likely every day. So, Bulls fans, come on, Jake. I picked you for the title here, you know. So do me a favour, will you? Anyway, I think that'll do us for URC chat. So, it's time to get into rugby around the world.
Great stuff. So, I'm going to start off with Super Rugby Pacific. So, the Canes, because I'm cool like that, the Hurricanes have continued their perfect start to the season and beat the Drua, as I mentioned earlier, at a sold-out HFC Bank Stadium. The Crusaders are still bottom, which is absolutely crazy, and they got beaten by the Force.
It's absolutely crazy.
I should say, who are second from bottom. Yeah.
That was a bottom-of-table clash, Crusaders versus Force. And Force put a good couple of scores on them there, you know, and the stats for the Crusaders this season are just diabolical. Like, have we ever seen a team go from the top of the mountain, seven consecutive titles, to the very bottom? So, Crusader, I'm just going to read this out. So, Brett McKay read this out on his podcast, but it's my tweet, so I'm going to read it out again. How about that? Fewest wins. Most yellow cards, worst line-out percentage, second fewest offloads, second fewest carries, second fewest meters, third fewest tries scored, third fewest defenders beaten, fourth fewest clean breaks. This is the Crusaders we're talking about from New Zealand. You know, those Crusaders. Turns out if half your players get injured and the other half get up and go to Japan and your coach leaves and your kit supplier changes, there's nothing you can do. So, at least that's the big narrative of the Super Rugby season. You know, you could say that maybe with the number of New Zealand players going to Japan, the quality has kind of taken a bit of a dip. You know, our friend Jade said on the Scoop Pod that in Super Rugby, there's two good teams, which is the Hurricanes and the Blues, and then the Chiefs can have a great result on their day. But, you know, the story of the season is the Crusaders for sure. Although no one's willing to rule them out because you only need to get into eighth for the playoffs and then it's anybody's game.
Right, let's move on to Japan Rugby League One. So, Sun Goliath drew with Blue Rebs 31-31, while Wild Knights are still top of the table with 14 wins from 14 games. What's going on in the wonderful world of Super Rugby Americas, mate?
So, Dogos and Pampas, the two Argentinian teams, are still joint top, 35 points each. And then it's a big gap down to Yacaré in third. So, it's looking pretty sure who's going to win this league this time. It's going to be the first time I think the Argentinian teams are going to win it. And then into some Northern Hemisphere rugby. So, in the top 14, Stade Francais stayed top after a controversial, I'm told, winner against Bayonne, when a lot of people thought that this try should have been chalked off for obstruction, that someone got in the way of someone and the try shouldn't have stood. But the try did stand, and Stade Francais beat Bayonne, and they are still top of the log. It didn't really change the standings much, because Toulouse went on to lose to Toulon in the two derby, which is played at Stade Velodrome in front of like 60-odd thousand people, like crazy crowds. Absolutely fantastic to see. Toulon managed to get the win over the line at the end. For some reason, their coach was absolutely fuming about something towards the end. So, trying to paint the picture. So, Toulon had a, you know, in football, in the round ball game, when they're like, there's a team's winning and they keep it in the corner for a bit. Toulon kind of did that. So, they had a penalty on Toulouse's 5 meters and they took a tap and go. And the Toulon coach wasn't happy about it for some reason. He was whistling them, but the comms were saying it was so loud in the venue that the players couldn't hear him. They weren't looking around to talk to him or anything. And they just kind of did their own thing and eventually saw it across the line. Dan Bigger booted the ball out on full time to get the win. Lester finding a Nuku, the Kiwi winger come centre, moved again from Crusaders last season, scored two tries in this game. We just love French rugby so damn much. What happened in the English Prem, mate?
For me, only one place to start, and that was Bristol's hammering of Newcastle, 85-14. Somehow Bristol are now up to fourth in the table, which I think is just crazy given where they were at earlier this season. Bath are in second. Don't think anybody's surprised at that, while Newcastle are still rock bottom with 0 wins from 15 games. Moving to the English Championship, Ealing are still on top after beating Doncaster 49 points to 9. The London-based side are 8 points ahead of Coventry, who themselves beat Bedford 54-19 over the weekend. And in Major League Rugby, Miami got their second ever win, coming out 42-27 winners away at NOLA Gold. Free Jacks lost out at home to Seawolves in the Big East v West game. That was a top of conference clash. Both are still top, though. What's going on in the Welsh Prem?
So we're into the last round of fixtures, I think, this week. A lot of games get cancelled or postponed for reasons in this league. But we're into the last round coming up this weekend. So in the weekend just gone, we talked about Bridgend getting an absolute thumping off Newport. They took 89 points. Well, this week, Bridgend put 76 points on Merthyr. So just don't know what's gone on there. There's some kind of story that's behind the scenes there that we need to unearth. Llandovery beat Swansea 54 points to 21. And this Thursday on S4C, and you can catch it on YouTube with English comms if you like, Thursday Night Rugby, Llandovery are playing Bridgend. And if Llandovery win that game, they finish top of the standings. So it's a huge match. So definitely one to watch out for this weekend. We'll share the links when the game kicks off on our socials. There's nothing else much going on Thursday nights apart from a Pro Day Deer game, which you can't watch in the UK. So definitely keep an eye out for this one. Let's go into the TV guide then, mate. So there's actually a bit of TV and broadcast news that we need to talk about first. And you just wanted to cover, you've been fighting the good fight on behalf of the people versus Premier Sports.
Yeah, you know, Premier Sports are back in the UK, and it just seems from my Twitter anyway that a lot of people are having issues. So I put a tweet out there just asking people for their experience. Did get a couple of comments back from people saying, you know, everything was fine. The linear channels certainly seem to be okay, as you'd expect. The main issues seem to be on the new Premier Sports app. A lot of people having login issues if they had a Viaplay account. struggling to log into their new Premier Sports account, and then just issues with the actual streams themselves. So I've asked people to get back to me. They have. I've been gathering everyone's response, and I'm also looking for anybody who's listening or anybody who's watching. Please let me know. Drop a comment. Drop us a DM, whatever. Just let us know what your experience has been. We're not here to bash Premier Sports. What we're here to do is just get that feedback and feed it back to them. So I've reached out to the URC. So I'm waiting for them to confirm. They've acknowledged my request just for a contact for Premier Sports, because I don't just want to go to their support team or just call them out on Twitter like that. I just want to get in touch with somebody from, you know, the technical side or from their PR side or whatnot, just to share some of the feedback so we can see if we can get some of these issues resolved. Because they're here to stay. And I think overall, you know, it's a good thing for the URC to have, you know, a player like Premier Sports. It is very affordable. So let's hope they get it right on the technical side. So yeah, if they have any feedback, good or bad, please let us know. And we'll be sure to feed that back to them, with the hope of improving the viewing experience for rugby fans. But what I might just add is just bear with them. They are just back. They announced this, at the end of Q4. You know, we're just out of Q1. Like, it is very difficult to get these things right. Some people might find that acceptable, but just having worked in the industry, I know that it can be quite difficult. So hopefully they get it right. Other issue I just wanted to touch on briefly, there has been a bit of controversy. So the FA Cup clash is being moved to an earlier kickoff, and that is mainly due to a request from the Metropolitan Police. So it looks like they are going to move it. It's tough. They're going to move it. It's going to happen. And the issue that people are having is that ITV have the rights actually to the FA Cup final and to the Champions Cup final. The Champions Cup final is going to clash with the FA Cup final now. So people are concerned that, you know, ITV, for commercial reasons, they're 100% going to show the FA Cup final on ITV1. The rugby is going to be pushed to ITV4. There's no way they'd prioritize rugby over it because it just doesn't have the same viewing figures. It is tough. A lot of people aren't happy with it, but I kind of put a tweet out earlier. Like, there are a lot of broadcasters broadcasting this competition across the world. You know, there are 14 of them. So can you imagine how difficult it is to come up with a solution, to come up with a kickoff time? They did consider, you know, a lot of people calling it for it just to be moved to a later time, but then that does interfere with French broadcasters and other commitments to broadcast rights. So it is what it is for me. The main thing is it's still going to be on free to air. That's a good thing. And finally, just want to touch on the All-Ireland League. There's going to be a first this weekend. TG Carr, who are probably one of the best broadcasters of rugby, particularly in the Republic of Ireland, they're going to be showing the men's and the women's AIL finals from the Aviva Stadium this coming Sunday. If you're in Ireland, check it out on TG Carr or The Player, or if you're anywhere across the world, check it out online. It's all free and it's a great service. And I think that pretty much wraps it up for me, mate. Any final closing words from yourself?
Just to shout out the response that we've had for the Dave Rogers special pod that came out on Saturday. So if you haven't listened to it already, it is about an hour and a half long. So understand if you're saving it up for a long journey or something like that, but definitely check it out. We've had so many wonderful comments back and letting us know how much people enjoyed it. If you want to learn like some of the insider secrets of being a pro rugby commentator, Dave has worked at Champions Cup level, right down to university level. He told me in the interview that he's done under eights. Like, he's worked at every level of rugby. He's also worked at the Olympics. He shared some of his stories there. It's really fantastic bit of content that we've managed to put out there. And Dave was an absolute superstar. So definitely, if you haven't listened to it already, please do. I promise that you will enjoy it and not regret it.
Great stuff. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, guys.
Social Podcast Network.